This is Jeff Davis with the Alignment Podcast, where we explore sales and marketing alignment strategy for B2B businesses. Make sure to visit jeffdavis2.com for all things alignment. Now let's talk about how to create togetherness.
Today's guest on the Alignment Podcast is actually very special. Dr. Antoine Flowers will actually be one of our expert panelists at the upcoming Sales and Marketing Alignment Summit here in Chicago on April the 25th. So if you are a B2B sales and marketing leader in your organization and you are looking to better understand how to leverage data to create a customer experience that really drives growth, you should definitely join us and be in the room. This particular event is exclusively for senior level leaders. It's a great opportunity to hear some thought leadership, to hear some great content, and also a great cross-functional networking opportunity. So I definitely encourage you, if you're in the Chicagoland area and this is something that's of interest to you, that you should definitely join us. You can get all the details for the event as well as purchase tickets at our website. It is S as in Sam, M as in Mary, A as in Apple, summit.com. Again, that's SMASummit.com. Really excited about the fourth edition of this event, so definitely hope to have you in the room. With that said, let me tell you a little bit about our guests. Today's guest is Dr. Antoine Flowers, neuroscientist, data scientist, and founder of Elegant Theory. Antoine works at the intersection of data analysis and machine learning engineering. He has a significant experience working closely with sales and marketing leaders to understand the customer journey using statistical modeling and data mining methods. In our conversation, we discuss the importance of data-driven decision-making in today's B2B business. Companies that see digital disruption as an opportunity, not a burden, will win with the modern buyer. What questions leaders need to be asking to ensure they are using their data in the optimal way. In Antoine's five senses framework for data strategy and some of the immediate results you can see if you implement them. With that said, let's jump into the episode. Antoine, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you, Jeff.
I am really excited to have you on the show because one of the themes that I have been really focused on this year is data. I think that many leaders in the B2B organization may not have been forced to or required to be as data-centric and insights-driven as they have in the past. But with the modern buyer, I think it's an absolute necessity. But before we really dive into the conversation today, I want folks to understand kind of you, your perspective, your background. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell us about you?
Thank you so much. Well, at my heart, I'm a neuroscientist. So I'm a systems level thinker. I really became a data scientist in grad school when I was studying neuroscience, getting my PhD and my master's in entrepreneurship. So as an entrepreneurship student, I helped start the first incubator for tech startups on campus. And it was there that I started teaching young entrepreneurs how to collect data from their customers, how to collect data from the market, and how to build better products. That's really where I got a love for using data to drive business. And that's really where I developed a passion for data-driven decision-making. So when I was ready to graduate, I decided I want to go into analytics and data science and went into the financial industry instead of research. And so I ended up in a data science group that supported a commercial line of business. And that's where I learned how to apply machine learning, automation, AI to business problems at scale. Later, I went back to the startup world as the program director at an accelerator, developed curriculums that really helped me develop thought leadership around truly building data-driven, data-enabled companies. And so now I'm in the asset management industry helping a legacy company create seamless synergy between their sales and marketing groups. And that's really where I found my niche.
So I think it's easy to say that you are qualified to speak on this topic by virtue that you clearly have understanding of data science, neuroscience, and that thing. And what I love about your experience is it's not just specific to the finance industry. I think that your understanding really spans all industries. So folks that are listening to the podcast and our conversation can apply this to a specific roles and responsibilities in whatever vertical they may be. So before we start our conversation, I recently read an article by Discover.org entitled The Coming Customer Data Tsunami. And I got really excited because I said, I got to get Antoine's perspective on this because I think it is coming. And I think, to be honest with you, some people are scared because their roles and responsibilities may be changing. They may have to get, you know, additional talent or they may have to skill up in order to be able to meet the needs of the modern selling organization. But it made three points that I wanted to get your perspective on in general, if you agree, and if you have any color to add to it. So the first one was B2B will get serious about customer engagement data. The second one was B2B intent data will start to go mainstream. And then thirdly, the in-demand skill set will be B2B data management. What are your thoughts in general about this particular concept?
I believe that the customer data tsunami is already here. Right before a tsunami hits, if you go to the beach, all the water is gone, right? And so everybody's wondering what's happening. Everyone is standing around trying to figure out what to do next. And as I go through industries and I talk to business leaders, that's exactly what I'm seeing. They know that the blockchains, the AIs, the data infrastructures, the Hadoops are out there. And what they're trying to figure out is how to use it to drive their business. Customer engagement data is not just a B2C concept, right? We need to understand what our customers are doing, how they're doing it, and how we can target them appropriately so that we can affect their behavior. And that's ultimately what we want to do, because for B2B companies, retention is so important because your sales cycle can be so long. Business intent data, absolutely. That's absolutely one of the most important things that B2B companies can be looking at right now. A, where's your customer going? What problems are you solving for them? And how can you better deliver that? I mean, that's really where data shines. And so, yeah, like I said, I really think it's already here. And what we have to start doing is becoming data mature first as business leaders. And then we can start worrying about who exactly to bring on. Because if we don't understand what problems we're trying to solve and what unique issues our company has to address, then we're going to get the rest of it wrong.
And I love that you made the point that it's not just a B2C thing. I continue to talk to folks and say B2C and B2B are less different than you think. And my argument for that is you go home, you interact with Netflix or whatever you do as a consumer, you purchase stuff on Amazon, you come to work and you bring yourself and your expectation of those experiences that you have out of work to work. So when you're interacting with other folks in a B2B situation, they are also doing the same thing. So why do we all think that somehow selling in a B2B context is vastly different than B2C?
You know, I don't know. I understand that when I first got into the space and started working with commercial business, it was very interesting because I thought it was a challenge. I'm like, we don't have as many customers. There's not as much data. So it is more challenging in that aspect. But really what you look at is the company that you're selling to is selling to consumers. So at the end of the day, you have to understand what the consumer's doing to understand the needs of your customer.
Right.
And that is really, you know, what it really comes down to, getting ahead of what our customer demands. And it's easier for B2B companies because we can both see what their customer is doing, what the trends are in their market or industry, and how that's going to affect them upstream.
So I come to you as a leader and I say, Antoine, I have been successful for the last 20 to 30 years. I'm not a data guy. I'm not a data woman. And I've been extremely successful just by my sheer talent and skill and background. Why is data so important? Why do I have to change what I've done since it's worked for so long? What would your response be to me?
Well, the digital disruption for people to get in your business now and the globalization thing that's happened over the last 20 to 30 years means that somebody can come into your space with a lot less connections than you had, with a lot less relationships. A lot of B2B businesses were started based on relationships. They were, especially in the finance and asset management industry, it was all relationship based. But now customers are expecting personalization at scale. If you're going to continue to grow, you're eventually going to get to 100, 200, 300, maybe 1,000, 2,000 customers and more a year. You can't scale your sales group linearly with that. You can't. You have to have a digital channel. And so to engage with customers through a digital channel means you have to understand the data that they're giving you when they interact with that channel. That's the first thing. The second thing is I'm going to use a basketball analogy. A couple years ago, the Golden State Warriors blew out everybody in the league. Nobody could touch them because they changed the way the game was played. They played small ball. They didn't have a big center. They shot a whole bunch of threes. But then when everybody started doing that, when everybody changed their lineup, now you see that they're kind of, they're still in the lead, but that the difference between them and the number two team is a lot smaller. And that's what we're going to see in the B2B space. As more people get these tools, as more people find it easier to reach out to customers, easier to set up more efficient business models, easier to use places like Amazon to cover logistics, a lot of those barriers to entry and things that made people successful in the pre-data are now that playing field is leveled. And so you need to re-up your competitive advantage.
And I think you bring up a good point, because I do agree that relationships will always be important. But I think we're getting to, for many businesses that I work with and talk to, a relationship maturation or maturity point where, yes, you built a big book of business on relationships, but that's not going to be sustainable. And it's also not scalable anymore.
Yes.
So to your point about this digital disruption, if you're going to exist in this new era where the modern buyer is requiring more personalization, value first, all of those sort of things, consultative selling, all of those kind of concepts, relying on relationships alone is not enough anymore.
Correct.
Okay. So when you look at data and insights, and so I had a great podcast guest on, Ted Corbeil, he talked about data and insights being timely, accurate, and relevant, but we really had this conversation about the difference between being data-driven and insights-driven. And what we argued kind of in that conversation, and he agreed with me, is that data in and of itself is useless. If you want to make business decisions, you have to have insights in order to be able to explain to folks what they need to do differently. So give me your perspective on the difference between data and insights.
So I'm going to say yes and no to that. I think there are two sides to that stone. So data is like the rock at the top of the hill. It's potential energy. It gives you the ability to potentially do something. What it is that you do next depends A, on what type of business you are, B, on what type of skill set you have within the business. But data is the gunpowder. Insights is what happens when you turn that gunpowder into a rocket or a spaceship. It's when you give it a direction, you give it a meaning, you give it a purpose. And that only happens when A, you know how to ask the right questions. B, you know how to ask questions quantitatively, because the language of analytics and insights is quantitative. So you have to have that language and skill set. And then to transform your data into insight, you really have to have an understanding of all the decisions that you make within your organization. And so insights is like a process. There's no such thing as like an insight, right? It's insights, the generation of insights is a process that you get to iteratively as you start to understand what questions you have, what things you can affect, what levers you pull. Whereas data is kind of the lifeblood that flows through these insight engines that you can create. And so, you know, when I talk to people about analytics, I use this five senses framework. And it really harps on that point that you can create reflexes and automation and machine learning that just leverage data, right? And you don't need to do anything. It gets a certain pattern in the data, boom, it sends an email, boom, it tells your salesperson to make a call. That's not necessarily generating an insight, but it is generating an effort. To get to that point, you needed an insight to tell it to do that. So it's a little, it kind of muddies the waters when you separate the two, but they are different things.
So I definitely want to hear about your five senses framework. But before we get to that, because I thought that was interesting, you said it and I wanted more. I want to clarify. So when you look at insights as a process, I think that's really interesting. I never thought of it in that way. To me, it then seems in order for you to get these insights in this process that's iterative, if you want to get the most value from your insights, it definitely has to be sales and marketing working together. Because if it's just marketing going through this insights thing with no input from sales throughout that process, that feedback loop, then the insights may not be as
relevant,
as valuable, yeah. Or they might have the color that you need without that sales conversation.
100%. If you cover one of your eyes, your depth perception is off. You need both of your eyes to see. And sales and marketing are like two eyes in the same head. And the reality is marketing is letting me know, is giving me insights on what this person is interested in, what they may be shopping for, kind of their thought process as they go through the buying life cycle, as they go through the funnel. Whereas sales is telling me what type of customer this person is. Do they buy large items infrequently? Do they buy smaller items frequently? And which types of these customers are more profitable to me? So do I put one in my sales channel that's more expensive where I go sit down and I meet with them versus putting another guy on purely a marketing play? And you need both of those types of informations to really come up with a cohesive strategy. Without insight from both of those, you end up, you know, taking actions that are A, going to be really expensive, or B, really inefficient, or C, both.
So the visual I got just from the metaphor you used about covering one eye is amazing, because literally you are, by not linking sales and marketing and working cohesively together, you literally are covering one eye and trying to do your job. It's perfect. Okay, so the five senses framework, you said it, I got excited. Tell us what that is.
So the five senses framework is how I explain analytics to leaders within organizations. It's a blend of neuroscience and IT, but it works because it's easy and everybody can relate to it. I always start with sight. A company can usually see three things about their customer right away: what they're buying, when they're buying, how much they're buying. So right away, once I see these patterns, I know there are metrics I can drive and experiments I can run as a sales and marketing leader. For example, will running a promotion increase a customer's purchase frequency? Or will a call from an associate increase the odds of cross-sell? Or should we put them in an email drip campaign? Seeing what your customer is doing is powerful because it allows you to ask questions about how what you're doing affects their behavior. And so the difference between looking and seeing is when you're walking down the street, you're taking in all this information, right? And that's data. You're not doing anything with it. But once you fix your attention to something, then you start to notice details and patterns, and you can act on those details and patterns. And so one of the important things that we need to do as companies is start to leverage this information, A, know what we're looking at, understand the patterns we're seeing, and then build strategies around that. But you got to have your vision working for that to happen.
Okay. And so walk us through the five different senses and how they kind of roll up into this overall framework so that our leaders can get that and really be able to understand and process that.
Absolutely. So like I said, the first one is sight. The second one is hearing. Are we hearing what our customers are saying? Are we looking at the online reviews? Are we going through all of the information that they give us when they make sales calls? Are we actually looking at the notes that our salespeople put into the CRM? All of that is data that we need to be leveraging and getting to the right person and generating insight from. Another one that is really important that we understand intuitively is touch, right? How are we touching the customer? Are we going and sitting down with them? Are we sending them emails? Are we meeting them at conferences or events? How do we adequately touch, and how do we balance our resources to make sure that we're touching efficiently and effectively? And then how are we merging these senses, right? And understanding what we're seeing about a customer. So this is segmentation, the type of customer we have. What is the most efficient way to touch a customer in segment A, right? So all of these senses, they start to roll up into this framework that builds what I like to call a nervous system within the organization. And the great thing about the nervous system is once you've built it, you start to develop reflexes. And reflexes are fast because they go straight from the sensory organ to the muscle that it needs to move. It doesn't have to go through the analyst. And so if you take this back to vision, what actually happens when a fly flies at your face, right? You blink automatically. And so the reason that happens, or what you can do in a company to build in these reflexes, is start to leverage machine learning, AI, automation, so that when you see certain patterns like churn patterns, what do your customers look like when they're about to leave your company, when they're buying less of your product? And what can you do automatically? What campaign can you put them in? What event can you send them to? What action can you take to get them back on the path to being a top producer for you? And those are the types of things that the five senses framework really allows leaders to do, because A, it believes in seamless integration and transition of all of these senses into one cohesive body. And then B, it allows you to automate things so that you can scale beyond the numbers of people, beyond your actual headcount. And so one of the great things that I love about this when I talk to people about it is their eyes light up because they understand it. They say automatically, we do have all of this information about what our customers are saying about our product. Well, is that information making it back to the product people? Because sales, marketing, and product development are really a cycle. It's one thing. Mm-hmm. It's one process in the same organization. And we have to start to behave like that and think like that and build these data pipelines throughout our organizations. And I really think small and medium-sized B2B companies are well placed to do this because they don't have all the friction of really large enterprises as far as moving data from one location to another.
And I think one of the themes that I've seen on the marketing side of the house is that we are starting to realize that it's cheaper to keep customers than to continually focus on getting new customers. And so the example I like that you use is, if marketing knows the patterns or the signals that show that a customer is about to churn, is there a signal we can send to sales to say, hey, this customer looks like they're about to churn, what can we do? Whether that be through a marketing campaign or a salesperson going out to visit or making a phone call, whatever that is. But to your point, it's about those two sides of the system working together in order to react proactively, whether that be through AI or whatever programs we have, in order to be able to make sure that we're connecting with the customer in a way that keeps them on as a customer. So I like that. And I would agree, the minute you said the five senses framework, you kind of walked us through it, my eyes lit up too, because I was like, oh, this all really, really makes sense.
It does. It does. And I think when you start to look at it holistically, I think one of the most important parts of the framework is that it doesn't just teach you what you should be doing, but it's intuitive as to how you already work. So it's natural. And, you know, a lot of leaders ask me, okay, so how do I set up an organization to do this? And when I say, you know, back to the framework, well, your eyes are data collection tools, just like your CRM is a data collection tool. It doesn't do any analysis on its own, right? It has to go to a different part of your brain, the visual cortex that actually produces the insight. And so that's where you're going to send the information that you're getting from your CRM to your analyst, and your analyst is going to create the insights that then go out to leadership. And when you're really moving, when you're really actually in the framework heavy, what actually happens is the insights themselves turn into actions. So when that customer gives us signals that he's about to churn, he just shows up in a new call list for a sales guy with some context that says, hey, he has these products. These are how these products have been performing. This is how they've been selling. Give him a call. Maybe he wants to cross sell. Maybe something is changing in his market that we need to take notice of. And so when it's really functioning like we function unconsciously, you really develop this sixth sense. You get ahead of the game because the data is right in front of who it needs to be in front of automatically. And we don't have to, we reduce the friction of having a data science department, an analytics department kind of collecting and aggregating all this data.
So I can see, though, as a leader that may not be a quant leader or may not have in the past a serious data-driven approach to making business decisions, being a little bit concerned, worried, a little bit of angst, because I believe most leaders in the B2B organizations, their responsibilities are changing, whether they want them to or not. How would you talk to or help a leader understand what they need to do to become more comfortable with using data? Because we've had conversations prior to this, and that it's not that as a leader, you need to be an expert in data science. I don't think that's realistic, but we do need to, as leaders, understand the questions that we need to be asking, the capabilities that we need to build. So help me understand, as a leader that may be uncomfortable with data as they listen to our conversation right now, what steps do they need to take to get more comfortable using data to drive business decisions?
100%. That's one of the biggest issues that I run into when I really start talking to, especially senior leadership, that's been in their role for so long, they have intuition. And so really what you want to start to do is start to ask why you make the decisions you make. What do you think the outcome will be? And then try to find out whether or not you can get some information on whether or not that outcome is actually occurring. That in and of itself, that simple action is data-driven decision-making. Ask yourself, if I do X, what do I expect to happen next? And where in this organization are the results of my efforts actually captured? And then you've learned the basis of experimentation. But there's no magic bullet to this. Self-study in implementation is vital. You have to get started today. And there's so many great books out. There's so many great six-week boot camps. You know, here in Chicago, Northwestern, DePaul, University of Chicago, they all have executive leadership courses for becoming a data-driven leader. Two books that I think everybody should start with are Keeping Up with the Quants by Thomas Davenport and Data Science for Business by Foster Provost and Tom Fawcett.
Okay.
These books are written for business leaders. They're very simple, and they give you an understanding of the tools of analytics. What types of questions can you ask of data? And I think that's where a lot of leaders need to start, is what types of questions can I ask? And then you can start to go deeper and say, okay, you know, what data do we have to be able to actually ask these questions?
So I'll make sure to put those two books in the show notes for our leaders that are listening to the podcast so they can pick those up and take a look at them. One last question as we close out our conversation and our time today. I want to give folks something that's actionable as they kind of, you know, get off the podcast and go into work or go into a meeting or whatnot. When you look at a sales and marketing leader that say, you know what, I do agree we need to be making better decisions with data, where is the first place they can start if they're existing in an organization that is not historically data-driven? What's the first step to transforming to a more data-driven organization?
When you walk into work on Monday or whenever you go back.
Tuesday or Wednesday,
whatever day it is.
Maybe Sunday for some people.
Yeah. The first decision that you make, write it down. Write it down and really think about it. Really think about the outcome that you expect to happen and all the things that could go wrong and all the things that you think may factor into that decision being the right or wrong decision, and start to ask other people what they think. That is the core tenet of experimentation. It is iterative processes. It is not saying that this is right, we're going to move in this direction for the next 6 months. It's saying this is what the objective is. So it's objective-driven learning. It's objective-driven leadership. And it's saying, I don't necessarily know what the right way to accomplish this objective is. Here are the ideas I have. How can I start to get real life feedback on whether or not I'm right? And you can do that in Excel. You don't need to be able to code. You don't need a data scientist. You need an Excel spreadsheet or a whiteboard. And you need to start to write out what it is you're trying to achieve, some metrics that you think you can move, and certain actions that you're going to take against those metrics. And you need to set a timeline to see whether or not you are right or wrong. Once a week, once every 2 weeks, whatever the timeline of the decision is. And if it's not moving in the direction you thought it would move in, at the pace you thought it would move in, ask yourself why. And then once you ask yourself why, you have another experiment. And so, and you get started from there. And then slowly you start to say, okay, well, I need to ask another question, but I don't really know what that question is. And that's where the self-study and the books and maybe you have some analytics support, go into analytics meetups. There's so many meetups for business leaders in cities right now that, you know, there's really no shortage of resources for people to get kind of the help they need, the community that they need to start to answer these questions collectively.
Well, Antoine, I without a doubt appreciate you taking time, because I know this conversation around being data-driven has caused probably a lot of anxiety for leaders that, you know, historically have not operated in this way. But I think not only are you setting up the stage to say, you know, this is coming, and that you have to adjust, it's not really an option. It's great to let people know that, but also that we don't have to have angst and anxiety, because we can start small and not have to turn into data experts tomorrow. So I appreciate the perspective. I definitely probably want to have you back on the show so we can dive into the five senses framework and really walk through that so that leaders can implement that particular concept into their businesses, because I thought it was spot on. And I had a lot of notes for myself to ingest that and be able to understand that more deeply. So again, thank you for your time today, and we're looking forward to touching base with you soon.
Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to coming back. It was a great conversation.
Thanks for listening to the episode. Don't forget to visit me at jeffdavis2.com and follow me on Twitter at jeff_davis2. Did today's conversation resonate with you? Then share with your colleagues to help the Alignment Podcast grow. Join us for the next episode where we continue to talk about how to create togetherness.